Sadvaitam Savadutam Prajna Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shiva Sakam Svitam Scha Hey Krishna Karna Sindo Dinabandho Vigatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavane Shri Vrishnubhanu Siddha Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanchakapa Dhruvyascha Kripa Sinurvyascha Patitanam Vamanevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Maha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shyadvaita Gadhar Shivasati Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare 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 Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
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 Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 19, The Killing of the Demon Hiranyaksha, text number 33. Sutuvacham
Sutuvacham
Iti Shaurak Shaurasharava Akhyatam
Akshutya
Bhagavatam Shatana Ananda Param Leve Mahabhagavataha Vidya Sutuvacha Iti Shaurava Vakyatam Ashutya Bhagavat Katam
Ashutya Bhagavat Katam
Shatananda Param Leve
Shatananda Param Leve
Mahabhagavato Dvija
Mahabhagavato Dvija
Sutuvacha
Sutuvacha
Iksha Rava Vakyatam
Iksha Rava Vakyatam
Ashutya Bhagavat Katam
Ashutya Bhagavat Katam
Shatanandam Param Leve
Shatanandam Param Leve
Mahabhagavato Dvija
Mahabhagavato Dvija
Yeah.
iti kausha bhagyatam asyukya bhagavatam saranam param mere
Sutta Goswami.
Uvacha
said, iti thus, Kausharava, from Maitreya, son of Kusharu.
Kusharu.
Akhyatam told. Ashutya, having heard. Bhagavat Katam, the narration about the Lord. Shatta, Vidura. Anandam, bliss. Param,
transcendental.
Lebe,
achieved.
Mahabhagavata, the great devotee. Dvija, O Brahmana, Shonaka. Translation of purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Shri Prabhupada. Sri Siddha Goswami continued, my dear Brahmana, Shatta, the great devotee of the Lord, that's Vidura, achieve transcendental bliss by hearing the narration of the pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead from the authoritative source of the sage Kausharava Maitreya. And he was very pleased. Purport. If anyone wants to derive transcendental pleasure by hearing the pastimes of the Lord, he must hear from the authoritative source as explained here. Maitreya heard the narration from his bona fide spiritual master, and Vidura also heard from Maitreya. One becomes an authority simply by presenting whatever he has heard from his spiritual master. And one who does not accept a bona fide spiritual master cannot be an authority. This is clearly explained here. If one wants to have transcendental pleasure, he must find a person with authority. It is also stated in the Bhagavatam that simply by hearing from an authoritative source with an ear and a heart, one can relish the pastimes of the Lord, otherwise it is not possible. Sanatana Goswami therefore has especially warned that one should not hear anything about the personality of the Lord from the lips of the non-devotee. Non-devotees are considered to be like serpents. As milk is poisoned by a serpent's touch, so although the narration of the pastimes of the Lord is as pure as milk, when administrated by the serpent-like non-devotees, it becomes poisonous. Not only does it have no effect in transcendental pleasure, but is dangerous also. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has warned that no description of the pastimes of the Lord should be heard from the Mayavada or the impersonal school. It's clearly said, Mayavadi Vasya Shunile Haya Sarvanasha. If anyone hears the Mayavadi's interpretation of the pastimes of the Lord, or their interpretation of Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, or any other Vedic literature, then he is doomed. Once one is associated with impersonalists, he can never understand the personal feature of the Lord and his transcendental pastimes. Siddha Goswami was speaking to the sages headed by Shonaka, and therefore he addressed them in this verse as Dvija, twice born. The sages assembled at Naimisharanya, hearing Srimad Bhagavatam from Siddha Goswami, for all Brahmanas. To acquire the qualification of a Brahmana is not everything. Merely to be twice born is not perfection. Perfection is obtained when one hears the pastimes and activities of the Lord from a bona fide source. Sutuvacha iti kaushara vakyatam ashupya bhagavat katam shatanandam param leve mahabhagavato dvija. Sri Suta Goswami continued, my dear Brahmana, Shatta, Vidura, the great devotee of the Lord, achieved transcendental bliss by hearing the narration of the pastimes and Supreme Personality of Godhead from the authoritative source of the sage, Kaushalava, Maitreya, and he was very pleased. Mom Vishnu Vidaya Krishna Purustaya Bhutaya Srimate Bhakti Vidanta Swami Tanamane Namaste Sarasatundayave Oravani Pusharane Nirvishesha Shunivadi Paspatya De Sitarne. Nice to be back here in Radhavish. Here is being described something quite simple, but things that are simple for us are quite complicated. But because we're very complicated, we think they're very simple. In a different way than they actually are simple. In other words, here Maitreya is speaking to Vidura, and they're in ecstasy. So that's quite simple. But the way that they're obtaining ecstasy, or they're deriving ecstasy, is not by something very complicated. They're simply sitting there by the Ganges, and they're hearing about Krishna, and they're in ecstasy. There is no elaborate arrangement. I doubt whether Maitreya was sitting on a big asana, and that Vidura was doing anything else, was sitting on the grass. They were probably both sitting on the grass and simply talking about Krishna. And they were in ecstasy. And how that's obtained, here it says that Maitreya had heard from a bona fide source. Previously, he was present when Krishna was about to quit the planet, when Krishna was speaking to Uddhava. He was listening also, and he understood the philosophy of Krishna consciousness and accepted. Similarly, we can also obtain the same happiness, whether we're sitting here in a very nice temple, such as Radhadesh, or we're sitting outside. It's a little cold outside. If we just hear the pastimes of Krishna with the right mood from the right source. Of course, then it gets a little bit more complicated. We'd have to talk about what authority is, what the right source is, and what the right mood is. But the fact is, Shushusha Sharadanasya Vasudeva Katarufi Syan Mahatsevaya Vipra Punya Tirtha Nishevana. O best of the twice born, by serving the great devotees, great service is done. By such service, one gains affinity or taste by hearing the message of Godhead. So this is what we're trying to achieve. The whole International Society for Krishna Consciousness is to help us achieve that taste by hearing about Krishna. If we're not developing a taste by hearing about Krishna, then we're not making any genuine progress in the path of devotional service. Of course, we can examine why we presently don't have a taste for hearing about Krishna, and that's also part of our philosophy, and why or how we can develop that taste. But here are two things we've stressed. One of them is Avaishnava Mukodgirna Hari Putam Hari Gatam Vitam Shravana Naivakartavyam Sarvo Sarvotishtam Tapaya. Sarvotishtam Tapaya. That just like a milk is very nice, but when milk is touched by the lips of a serpent, then it has a poisonous effect. So similarly, hearing Vaishnava literature from a Mayavadi will not bring about the desired result, that is, Krishna consciousness. On the other hand, Prabhupada also cites the verse, Satam prasangamam avirya sambhido bhavanti ritkarnar sayanam kata tajjoshvarashva vivarva varvani sharavati bhakti anukramishati. That in the association of devotees, hearing about Krishna produces two results in its proper form. One of them is that it becomes pleasing to the ear and to the heart. Heart meaning, you can also say, the mind. In other words, what does it mean? We can give so many interpretations, but what does it mean being pleasing to the ear? It makes sense, I believe, from the extent. Prabhupada is explaining that the ear is the vehicle by which we obtain knowledge, by hearing. So it makes sense, it sounds reasonable, and then if we accept it, then our heart becomes purified. As it says there, we get liberation, and then real faith, real attachment, and then finally devotion. So in the association of devotees, if we're hearing properly, then we should understand something. Something should make assumption, as they say colloquially in English, I don't know in French or another language, but they say something clicks. Do they have that expression in Dutch? In French? Click. It makes sense. It fits. Or as Prabhupada said, that this philosophy is the most consistent, exacting, and voluminous due to its unbroken system of disciplined succession. In other words, what Krishna consciousness is talking about is absolute knowledge. That may sound quite dogmatic, because practically speaking, in the material world, everyone believes that whatever they say is absolute, although they may change it the next moment. But somehow or another, there's some kind of sense that what I'm saying is true. But our philosophy says that truth cannot be expressed by those who have four defects. At least, they cannot realize the truth perfectly if there are conditioned souls. Conditioned souls means they have imperfect senses. They are an illusion. They make mistakes and they're subject to cheating. Of course, what perfection is, what imperfect senses are, may be slightly different from our material conception of these things. What cheating is may be different from our conception of things. But that's the basic principle of philosophy. That a conditioned soul cannot at least realize perfect philosophy. Now the question is that if we're imperfect souls, if we're conditioned souls, then although we may believe that whatever we're saying is true, but how do we know it's true? Actually, any conditioned soul doesn't know at all what he's saying, whether it's true or not. He may think he knows, but there's always going to be some doubt because we don't have an absolute reference as conditioned souls. That real faith is established in the mode of goodness, no one can see things clearly. Other than that, people are always doubtful because, as we all have experienced, for a conditioned soul, the whole world is always changing. So whatever we hold as truth now, we can be assured that in the future, by some arrangement, it may be different. Now this person is my friend, I think that's truth, but later on I find out that he wasn't my friend, so that wasn't truth. I just believed it was truth, but now I found out it wasn't true. Therefore, we have to hear from something which is absolute. But how can a conditioned soul, who's conditioned, understand whether something is absolute or not? Because if you understood that the only way we can understand that something is absolute is that we ourselves would have to be absolute. Or as they say in English, it takes one to know one. How do we know if something is pure? By what standard? We'd have to become pure to be able to perceive whether it was pure or not. So does that mean we can't take any steps forward until we become pure or until we become absolute or whatever? No. The fact is that whether Krishna consciousness is whether Krishna consciousness is absolutely correct or not, that's only in the beginning a theory for ourselves. Prabhupada writes in the beginning of the Bhagavad Gita that at least theoretically we have to accept that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Because otherwise, why bother hearing from Krishna? No one's twisting anyone's arm to come here and hear about Krishna. People will hear about Krishna because they have some taste that's called shraddha. They may have gotten it by some kind of mukhi, agyata sukriti, or some kind of agyata sukriti, unknown pious activity performed. They've gotten some faith. So hearing about Krishna, Krishna begins very simply in Bhagavad Gita. The body's changing and we're the same. That's it. Krishna doesn't go into the whole thing about, I've done so many experiments and we've realized that, you know, we've interviewed so many children who remember their past lives. Because that may be true. That's one kind of evidence based upon empirical investigation. But still there may be some doubt. But if we can't perceive that our body is changing and that we're the same, then there's no use going any further in the Bhagavad Gita, because we're not on the human form of life. We have not enough sufficient intelligence to hear anything else. If people actually believe that their body is not changing, then they're insane. Because every moment there's a different experience. But someone who's convinced that it's the same exact body that was in the womb of my mother, and that there's absolutely no difference whatsoever between my body now and the body when I was 6 or 2 months old, then what can we say? Then where is the consistency in the logic and the arguments? And how reasonable a person is who claims like that. And if I claim I'm a completely different person than I was when I was 5 years old, that there's nothing at all the same, then you just contradicted yourself. In one sense, he said that the body's exactly the same, but you say that I'm a completely different person. So it's completely contradictory, unreasonable. Therefore, reason means that my body is changing, everyone can perceive that, but it must be a person who's perceiving the different bodies. So therefore, the person must be the same. Unfortunately, that level of intelligence, most people, either they are not on that level of having it, or they're not introduced to such a clear conception of life. And without that conception of life, we ourselves, we can't take a step forward in progress. Progress that leads to us understanding reality. Because if I can't understand who I am, what other part of reality is very important? I may understand everything else, but if I can't understand my real nature, then whatever I'm doing may be misdirected. Therefore, Krishna starts out very simple, and he's appealing to us not on the basis of what we consider authority. You must accept this book, because if you don't accept this book, then you go to hell and burn. That may be true, actually. That's not how Krishna begins to appeal to us. He's appealing to us on the basis of our intelligence, logic and reason. Buddha yoga, of course, it doesn't stop there, simply discriminating matter from spirit, but he also uses our intelligence to understand that what there are different types of spirit are, that there's a supreme spirit, there's a little spirit, that we're not the body, therefore there is something moving this body, and it's not us, because we're not fully conscious of how this body is functioning. But it's functioning quite nicely, so there's a creator of the body, is the creator of the universe, who has infinite intelligence, and he can give us a little bit of intelligence to understand about the difference between our body and ourselves, and about who he is. Some intelligence. So, with that little intelligence, we can progress further. So that knowledge doesn't come from any one of us. It comes from Krishna. Krishna is revealing that knowledge, and as it says here, one who repeats that knowledge, he becomes an authority. Because he doesn't claim that it's my knowledge, but he claims this is what Krishna says. Whether he realizes it completely or not, that's a different thing. But at least he's the authority as much as he represents Krishna. Just like, for instance, a representative of a factory who's selling the factory's goods. So if he simply sells the factory's goods, gets orders, and gives the orders to the factory, and the factory delivers the goods, then he's a bona fide representative. If he claims he's a representative of the factory, and he sells his own goods, say you say, I'm a representative of the Rolex factory, and I'm selling Rolex goods. Well, Rolex goods is considered to be quite, I don't know if you know Rolex, but it's a famous watch. So people consider it a quite good make, a nicely made watch. They spend a lot of money for it. But if you start selling watches from Taiwan, imitation Rolexes, on behalf of the Rolex company, then you're considered to be a fraud. You're not bona fide. Your activities are not bona fide. Similarly, if we act as Krishna's representative, although we ourselves are not creating the philosophy, then still we're acting as a representative, we're considered to be bona fide. Now there may be amidst bona fide representatives of Krishna, Prabhupada writes that there are two different levels of bona fide representatives. Guru ke, shiksha, guru ke, he says. Those who are giving shiksha, guru ke, a little verse here, tajani krishnira swarup. He should be known, the shiksha guru should also be known as the representative of Krishna. Antaryami bhakti shesta eduru. And he comes as two forms. One of them is the super soul, Antaryami, and the other is Bhakti Shrestha, the best of the devotees. And then Prabhupada writes, there are two types of instructing gurus. One of them is objectively in transcendence. Objectively means that everything is seen as it factually is. It is not that such a person has to refer to scriptural references, because he does refer to scriptural references, but he sees exactly what it says in the scriptures. And another is one who has realized something about, by following the process, what has realized something, and therefore he gives according to his understanding knowledge which will help someone progress in devotional service, according to one's relative position, subjective. And then Prabhupada writes that the acharya, in the true sense of the word, is authorized to deliver Krishna, enriches the disciple with full spiritual knowledge, and thus awakens him to the activities of devotional service. So we do need as much knowledge as we really want. In other words, the whole idea is to come to the platform of realizing that we're Krishna's servant. And being Krishna's servant means a lot. It doesn't mean something very small. It means, ultimately, as Krishna says, Vasudeva Sarvamiti Sarvamahatma Sudurlabha. Everything is Krishna. So it's a lot to be a servant of Krishna, because it means you have to become servant of everyone and everything, as Krishna wants. Not that servant to Krishna means, or servant to everyone means I'm servant to no one. No, Krishna has a very clear understanding of what he wants in this world. Krishna is not doubtful. It's not that you go to Krishna And he's just kind of figuring it all out. He hasn't really gotten it together. And if you come back next year, he'll probably decide what he really wants. If you ask Krishna what he wants for his birthday, his Janmashtami, he knows exactly what he wants you to give. He's not doubtful at all. So he has no doubt what he wants us to do at every moment. Although he may sometimes inquire from Uddhava what to do, but Uddhava knows that this is simply Krishna engaging in the service. Therefore, if we want to come to the platform of being without doubt, we have to come to the platform of full Krishna consciousness. And that full Krishna consciousness is an understanding that everything is Krishna's energy, and Krishna knows what he wants us to do with that energy, and we should find out what he wants us to do at every moment. Of course, we may not be so advanced or serious, or we may not have that capacity, but that is the goal of always inquiring from Krishna and always getting Krishna's reciprocation. Just like Arjuna was inquiring from Krishna, and finally he surrendered to Krishna, and he understood moment to moment, because of his reciprocation with the super soul in the heart, what Krishna wanted him to do. This is the platform of pure devotional service. That before, one has to humbly, if one doesn't know what to do, then one has to humbly inquire. And there is a whole process given in Bhagavad Gita to obtaining knowledge, beginning with humility. So then one has to humbly inquire, amadivam, adambidvam, without illusion, ahimsa, for the right purpose, etc. We can go over and analyze in detail what the process of obtaining knowledge is, but it begins with humility. Understanding that I don't know, I can't know unless Krishna gives me his mercy. And what is the process of Krishna giving his mercy? One has to hear from Krishna's representatives, one has to serve Krishna, etc. One has to engage in devotional service. So with a humble way, one seeks after the knowledge, and then when the answer becomes clear, then I act. Not that I'm not really so clear, but I do whatever I want to do anyhow. That process is whimsical. One has to understand what Krishna wants, and then if one does that, both externally, because Krishna had previously, acharyamam vijaniyam nava manyate karija. One has to accept the acharya, the initiating guru, also as Krishna, as representative. So we can act dutifully, for instance, under the directions of Krishna's present authorities, but the Shiksha Guru has to give us full knowledge by which we understand how to put everything in perspective. We may do dutiful activity, that's the beginning, initiation, but then we should understand very clearly what we're doing, how to see everything in Krishna's service, how to adjust all the different desires that people have, all the different instructions we have, how to adjust everything so that Krishna is pleased. So that means that we have to come to the platform of clear understanding so we can perceive what Krishna wants us to do under any circumstance. So that takes a little intelligence, it takes some surrender, it takes many things. So how to come to that platform? One has to hear. The best person to hear from is anyone who's in the super succession, who has more knowledge than me, I can take as my guru. But the best guru is one who has complete knowledge, who sees everything perfectly, and therefore he hits the bullseye every time. Someone may sometimes hit the bullseye, sometimes he doesn't hit the bullseye. But anyone who hits the bullseye all the time, then they're perfectly situated in transcendence, and they're the best person to hear from. Therefore, anyone acting, and anyone means not only as commonly in our society, we take the Diksha Guru as our authority, but we know that there's so many authorities. The sannyasis are authorities, the temple presidents are authorities, the PVCs are authorities, my mother's the authority, hopefully. My father's the authority. So many authorities. So anyone acting as an authority, Maharaja Shabdev says, They should take the position of acting as Krishna's representative. But everyone, whatever their position, shouldn't assume just because I'm a representative, therefore I become perfect, and whatever I say is perfect. No one has to understand that as long as I'm a conditioned soul, then whatever I say may be imperfect. But because I'm the authority, therefore the person will be benefited if they follow my instructions. If I'm truly the authority, if they're accepting me as an authority. As like Prabhupada says that in the purport to Anuvegam Karam Vakyam Satyam Priyahitam Chayat Swadaya Vyasanam Chayava Vangana Tapuchite. That austerity of speech has certain qualities. So, obviously, we're going to have to convey what we think Krishna wants us to do, what we want someone else to do, if we're taking that position as an authority. But there are certain qualities that should be there. So Krishna says, Anuvegam Haram Vakyam. So it should, the first quality he mentions, it shouldn't agitate the mind of the person you're telling them to do something. Of course, we're holding a class, and since we're not the super soul, none of us are the super soul, therefore we may agitate so many people's minds. Even by not saying, if we didn't say anything, everyone would get agitated. Thinking, well, when is the class going to get over? He's not saying anything anyhow. We're just wasting our time. And as soon as one opens his mouth and says something, someone's going to disagree. This rascal. Why did they ask him to give class? Another fanatical, you know, maybe whoever it is, giving class, preaching about his own glories indirectly, etc. Lording it over me and criticizing me, taking pleasure, whatever. So, if we said nothing, people would criticize. If we said something, someone's going to feel agitated. But, generally speaking, when people approach us, or people approach the devotee, or anyone who's an authority for advice, then one should not give advice if the person's not really, or if no one approaches you, you don't go around acting as the authority. If it's going to agitate the person's mind. Who's probably right, so I think the exact words are, one should not give instructions to another if it's going to agitate their minds. That the spiritual master, if he's accepted as an authority, then he can give instructions, but there's no acceptance of an authority, then one should not give instruction. So the exact words are, one should not speak in such a way as to agitate the minds of others. Of course, when a teacher speaks, he can speak the truth with the instructions of his students, but such a teacher should not speak to those who are not his students if he will agitate their minds. This is penance as far as talking is concerned. So that's the difficulty of giving class, is that you have to accept that you're probably going to agitate someone's mind. That's accepted. Otherwise, but no one's dragged into the class. You just have to accept it. But that may happen. But in general, one should not speak in such a way as to act as the authority if it's going to agitate someone's mind. But still, the authority has to speak, and the authority should present things truthfully and honestly. Because out of the four defects, namely imperfect senses, committing mistakes, and being an illusion, the worst mistake probably is cheating. Especially in Kali Yuga when there's only one leg left, everyone's kicking at the leg with the bull. Truthfulness. One should not cheat. And the main cheating is, although my senses are imperfect, although I'm an illusion, although I commit mistakes, still I'm telling everyone, advertising everyone, I'm perfect. Which is alright, except for the fact when it's shown that when it's imperfect, then everyone loses complete faith. Both in the representative and in the person that they're representing. which is quite a disaster in terms of spiritual life, because if one is representing Krishna and when people lose faith in the person is representing Krishna, then the result will be that there is a complete loss of the opportunity to make any kind of genuine spiritual progress. Therefore, if one is not on the absolute platform, where one is objectively perceiving reality, one should not present oneself on that platform. Of course, if one has disciples, for instance, one is initiated, then there is a duty of the disciple towards the spiritual master to follow out his instructions, because that's what initiation means, accepting someone as an authority. But that doesn't mean because I'm the authority, therefore whatever I'm doing is absolute. Just like theoretically, at least, one has children up to a certain age, the children are supposed to dutifully carry out the orders of their father. But most of our children are like, I guess, the four Kumaras. It's not bad. The four Kumaras in some ways. And that the four Kumaras were given some instruction by their father, and the first thing they did was disobey it. I don't know if it was the only instruction, but anyhow, it was enough to get Lord Brahma angry. And it's not easy to get Lord Brahma angry. But the idea is that generally the children are supposed to, at least in the Veda culture, accept the orders of their father upon their head, or else they're going to get the head cut off. The four Kumaras, being very elevated, transcendentalist, Brahma, he checked his anger with his great intelligence, because they were transcendental. Therefore, it was not good for Brahma to get angry at them. But when Maharaj Yayati, he was cursed, because it was Yayati who was cursed, wasn't he? And then he asked his sons, please take my curse, and none of them would take it except for Purva. Therefore, he cursed his sons. Similarly, I'm sure that in some ways, in the Western culture, we don't care very much about the blessings of seniors because we don't think anyone's senior to me. Therefore, who can give me blessings? But the Vedic culture wasn't like that. People are very much interested. The whole culture was there to receive blessings from others. If one gets the blessings and the authority, one advances. And if one doesn't get the blessings and the authority, then one won't advance. That is our philosophy. Therefore, right or wrong, just like at least in England they have that saying, my country, right or wrong, I guess I follow it. Right? What is the exact instruction? I'm not an English person. So. Oh, my country, right or wrong, still I love thee. You can put the thee in there to make it more holy, kind of biblical. So certainly authority, right or wrong, we follow it. But that doesn't mean we necessarily have to agree with it, or that the authority is necessarily always right. But because of the authority, we follow it until the authority gets corrected, or it becomes, or unless it's actually clearly detrimental to our spiritual advancement. So Prabhupada set up a system, for instance, to take into account that the authority may not always be right. That's supposed to be the chain of command or the different levels of authority within our society. Ultimately it winds up a Krishna, although the GBC is the ultimate managerial authority, but even the GBC, as Prabhupada has pointed out, is subject to Krishna's deliberation or Krishna's opinion. We shouldn't think that Krishna left the planet 5,000 years ago, he's dead and gone, and he just left some statue here for us to find. The Krishna is quite present, and Prabhupada said even if the GBC body is wrong, then they may get an appointment with Yamaraj and special. I'm just repeating what Prabhupada said in one lecture he gave. So everyone has ultimately had to, as in English they say, the buck stop. The buck, of course in English, in America, buck, they say in God we trust, but actually they believe in the dollar, in the buck. Buck is a colloquialism for a dollar. So the common saying is At the bucket stops.
The buck stops here.
The buck stops here. Which really means that they take the dollar as the absolute truth, although they say, in God we trust. But we know that the dollar is not the Almighty God. We know that Gopinath is the Almighty God. So that's where it all ends. And ultimately Krishna will make a decision. He makes so many decisions. What the results will be. But here is that the real result is what's supposed to be. We're supposed to develop ecstasy. We're supposed to develop taste at least, faith and taste, understanding, etc. So many things are supposed to be developed. So if we properly follow the authority with full knowledge, duty is only supposed to be the beginning. That's very difficult for us in the Western world. I can say it's difficult for me. I remember when I first joined the movement, then just the idea of having to bow down before some deity was quite difficult. Especially as I explained that our deity that we had was called Katamashi. Katamashi was a Gopal deity, which it has hand on this pole. Katamashi means businessman. And our deity was right. Our temple wasn't as big as this. The whole thing up and down, both floors, it was two floors. And it wasn't as big as this room was, or is. And the deity was right at the entrance. As soon as you opened the door, there was the deity, because that's where they put the temple. So, and then to go to the kitchen, you had to pass by the deity. To go upstairs, you had to pass by the deity. To do anything, you had to pass by the deity. So paying obeisance to the deity meant not one or two times, but hundreds of times. Although it was a good exercise, and I was practicing hatha yoga back then also. But it got a little too much, and my mind was going, oh, this is too much. But you had to do it. Not only you had to do that, but we had heard, because we were all fanatics back then, because we didn't know anything, that as soon as you saw the deity, you had to give him a grain of rice. You had to give him some offering. So we had a bowl there, and you can imagine how many grains of rice the deity was getting every day. Later on we learned better. In any case, but it was very hard for me to bow down. What to speak of carrying out the instructions of my temple authority who I knew was in Maya. So that dutiful action, dutiful activity is one thing, and then later on, trying to understand what it's all about is another thing. The dutiful activity will bring us to the state of consciousness where our mind is not so attached or averse that we're actually a little calm, collective, that we can actually hear something. Then we can begin to understand what we're actually doing in truth. So that's the second stage. We may have very good authority, they may know all the rules and regulations, they may know so many things, but they may not have full understanding, or they may only have partial understanding. The more understanding they have, then the better it is for us. The clearer it becomes. If we have a real interest, jignasu, shreya, uttama, what the ultimate goal of life is, then we have to inquire from those who can give us the best understanding. But here it mentions those are our shiksha gurus. If we get a clear understanding and we don't accept it, then that's our misfortune. If we don't get a clear understanding and we accept it, that's certainly our misfortune also. If we're actually inquisitive, we actually want to understand things clearly, then we have to inquire. Krishna says in one of the Chaturasoki verses, we have to inquire up to the limit. Ultimately, the limit is Krishna. We have to hear what Krishna says from so many different angles. That's why we have the Srimad Bhagavatam class. So that finally things become clearer. We can't expect everything's going to become 100% clear at once. But what is that clarity? Is that I am simply Krishna's servant. That's it, as they say in Hindi, box. Therefore the spiritual master, his consciousness, or her consciousness, but we're neither he or her, we're actually she, as Prakriti.
para-prakriti.
That understanding is that, no, I'm not the spiritual master. The real spiritual master, the Uttama Adhikari, the objective personality who's mentioned here, doesn't take any, he takes everyone as his spiritual master, or her spiritual master. He sees everyone as Krishna's representative. How that is not my body. But he understands that whatever I say is coming from Krishna. He's simply repeating the words of Krishna, coming down through his spiritual master. The super soul is inspiring him. He remembers his spiritual master. And he repeats those instructions. And when he repeats those instructions, he doesn't take it as his instructions, but he takes it as Krishna's and his spiritual master's instructions. And when he sees his disciples or followers following those instructions, then he learns from them how to become a better servant of his spiritual master and Krishna. He sees them as representatives of his guru. So that Uttama Adhikari cannot be imitated. If one tries to imitate by in different ways, there are different ways mentioned in the nectar instruction and other places, imitation, then one is sure to become degraded. But that is the platform of perfect understanding. And although we may not have perfect understanding, every authority has to learn how to see like that. Although we may not perfectly see it, but no one should take credit for anything. One should give all the credit to Krishna in a real way. Not only the result should be given to Krishna, the practical result, but also the credit should go to Krishna, not just sentimentally, because sentimentally we can walk around as the devotees used to do. They used to say, oh, Prabhu, I'm the most full. And at least I heard, not from Prabhu directly, but I've heard that Prabhu said, and someone said that to Prabhu, and Prabhu said, you're not the most anything. What's that? Yeah, you're not the most anything. Or, I heard another time, Prabhu said that, if you're so fallen, then why don't you do something about it? So that sentimental imitation that I'm the most fallen is not bad, but you might get another instruction when you're saying that. That we may to come to the platform of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's, or to get Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy, we have to cultivate that mood. That I'm nothing, I'm simply the servant of the servant of the servant of Krishna. I'm nothing more than that, which is quite glorious to come to that platform. But if we start thinking that we're an independent authority, that we have, you know, some right to be an authority, whatever mentality we may be in, then we lose our humility, we lose our connection, we lose our vision, and therefore our potency will be reduced in proportion to our lack of understanding. So neither will be able to help so much ourselves and what to speak of anyone else. But one who strictly follows the disciplic succession, one who has the mood of simply being the servant of the servant of the servant, they can convey that knowledge to their follow, to anyone, especially to themselves, and that will have some benefit. That's shown practically, especially by following the Ar Uttama Adhikari, Śrīla Prabhupāda, who practically demonstrated what it means to be the servant of the servant of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, to spread his movement. Prabhupada was pleased if someone distributed books, if he did deity worship, taught at school, did so many things, and somehow or another, the whole goal had to stop, or the buck had to stop Krishna, not at the dollar. That Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It had to stop there, then Prabhupada was pleased. Otherwise, if the conclusion was it stopped at the dollar, that was as good as materialism or impersonalism, and Prabhupada would become like fire. So somehow or another, we follow Prabhupada, then we'll make sure that the buck always stops, it always stops at Krishna. It always stops at Krishna and doesn't stop somewhere else. So, thank you. Sorry for taking so much time. Would you like to say something, Krishna Shishya Prabhu? Yes.
If you have a Vaishya Guru, and then maybe later you find a Shishya Guru who kind of completely trains you, you know, like that, then in one sense it seems that Vaishya Guru, he doesn't really, you don't seem so much, so he doesn't instruct you. But this Shishya Guru, who might be very advanced about instruction, So in that sense, you would say, well, Shiksha Guru is more important, or...
Yeah, of course he is. That's our Arjuna's succession, is principally Shiksha. But on the other hand, what is he going to instruct him? He's going to instruct you also to surrender to your, be dutiful to your Diksha Guru. He starts saying, as sometimes we've had that experience, or Prabhupada had that experience, suddenly the Shiksha Guru says, I'm more important than your Diksha Guru, don't listen to your Diksha Guru. And Prabhupada said, he's bogus. Because he doesn't know Shiksha. He doesn't know Prabhupada's Shiksha, at least. And if we take Prabhupada's Shiksha as coming down through disciple succession, then at least my understanding of what Prabhupada said on that particular subject matter is that he's misleading him. On the other hand, if he gives you full, if he has a full understanding, and everything he does connects you with Krishna, then, yeah, of course, then he becomes more prominent. But one has to understand the knowledge fully, and then one, by that knowledge, one realizes he's the servant of everyone. By becoming Krishna's servant, by realizing he's Krishna's servant, he's realizing that everyone, he's servant to everyone. So that's the person who can give you all instruction. Full instruction doesn't mean that you've understood exactly what's going on in Apsara Loka, what was going on in, you know, what the, how all the different symbols are on the Vishnu forms. Full knowledge means that actually I am everyone's servant. And that one who gives you that mood of service to everyone, all the Vaishnavas, correct service. Service, we may serve in so many different moods, but actually the service to Krishna. We know exactly what Krishna wants, perfectly know, or perfectly act as a representative of Krishna, and therefore serve everyone perfectly as Krishna would like us to do it. One who can teach, train us up like that, then they're the perfect spiritual master. Is that clear? So therefore all the etiquette is there, everything is there. Nothing is left out or forgotten, but it's all perfectly revealed. And there's no contradiction. Everything is adjusted, at least. Yes. Well, if you don't know, then don't ask. Usually it's not so difficult to figure it out. Well, for instance, say a big heavy weight was about to fall on your head. You wouldn't think, I wonder what Krishna wants me to do right now. Inquire, I have some doubt. Should I get smashed by the heavy weight, or should I move away? You probably could figure it out quite spontaneously that Krishna would probably like you to move away because this belongs, you know, that much philosophy we have. We have to move away because this is Krishna's body. Besides that, if the heavy weight hit my head and it squashed me, I couldn't think of Krishna very well. So many things. So we'd move away, and we wouldn't have so many doubts. Someone came up and preached to us, why did you commit that big offense by moving away from that heavy weight? Don't you realize Krishna wanted you to get squashed? So that much obvious philosophy, we wouldn't have any doubts. On the other hand, there may be things that are more subtle, not so obvious. So if we're really serious, then they have some importance to them. Just like if it's, we're hungry, we want to eat, then we don't need Krishna to figure it out for us. We can get Sanakapanda. That is, Chanakapanda says, if you're hungry, you eat. So, it's pretty simple. It's an everyday affair. We have experience that it's not a big disaster if I eat usually, etc. On the other hand, if I'm doubting whether I should get married or not, then it may require some investigation. You know, what are the requirements to get married? What are the requirements of my partner? What we have to decide together? So many different factors. I'm going to make enough money, if I'm going to be able to support a family, if we want a family, where we're going to live, etc. So many factors have to be there. Some intelligence has to be there. So until actually it's clear, not that, hey, forget it, let's just get married and see what happens. You know, we'll have a few kids and see how it all winds up. Because it's love, you know. By love, everything works out. No, we should inquire first about something beyond what we call love in this material world, some other factors which are, in the long run, substantial. Then when it's clear, then we can make the arrangements the best we can. It's as clear as possible to us. Because things may not always be perfectly clear, but it's clear enough, we're going to do something. Just like in the state of Nishta, things may not be 100%, we may not be 100% Krishna conscious, but we're Krishna conscious enough that we always act in Krishna consciousness. Similarly, we may not be ever, or in this lifetime, or in the near future, 100% free from all doubts, but the doubts have been cleared away enough that I can act with confidence. And then when I act with confidence, then my enthusiasm will grow in Krishna consciousness. And as my enthusiasm for Krishna consciousness grows, then everything is clearer and more realized. Is that clear? Yes.
Could you explain more what needs to be served to everyone?
I don't know. Servant of everyone? Means that I get into the sentimental thing that I'm everyone's servant, whatever they tell me, I do. It usually means that I have so many people I accept as my authority, I go to them, they say do this, another authority says do that, another authority says do that, and I think, well, how can these all be authorities? They're all telling me different things. I'm confused. So I might as well do what I want to do. But my mind's telling me to do it. So I accept so many authorities, I think they all contradict each other, apparently, and then I just do what I want to do. Or what my mind's dictating for me to do. It's more likely. So one authority means that it has to be one authority. Ultimately one to judge what ultimately I'm supposed to do. Internally, Krishna tells us what to do. This is what I want you to do. But externally, people may not be so clear. But Krishna knows what he wants us to do. And there may be some authority who knows also what Krishna wants us to do. Yes? Well, most of us are not on the platform of Buddha Yoga to understand always what Krishna wants. But usually we know, pretty much. We've heard the philosophy, we've tried to practice it, we know something. Usually there's not much doubt what we're doing. It's not so complicated, our philosophy, or as Prabhupada has explained things to us, the objective is not so complicated. But if we're not intelligent enough to even understand these simple things, still we at least we render some service out of love, and we do it, we render all kinds of services, Prabhupada says, out of love, then Krishna will help us. Even we have a bona fide organization, etc., etc., we have a bona fide spiritual master, but we don't have so much intelligence to appreciate it. Still, if we just keep on trying to do all kinds of services out of love, and Krishna will help us. And one day we'll understand what the organization, what the spiritual master are trying to tell us. That intelligence will be given to us. Okay, thank you very much. Gregory Ashman Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.